This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Peggy, let's hit him big time.
Houston, let's get in the loop.
You better get ready because we're going to show up and show up.
With John Lopez and Reggie Atitula. Always live.
Love it. Love it.
Always local.
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
You're in the loop on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
Here we go. Texans up one, but here's Brandon McManus, 45-yard attempt, left hash mark. Snap is down, the kick is up, and it's good. The Texans lose as time expires, 24-22 to the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, you're in the loop, Sports Radio 610. You got John Lopez, Figgy Fig, and myself, Reginald Atitula, on a Reaction Monday. Brought to you by Shoppers John Deere. And, the reaction is to that particular play and all the plays that came before it that led to a Packers victory. Unfortunately, your Texans fall 24-22 in the last moments in what we had kind of set up as a really a game that would help us learn some things about these Texans. And so let's talk a little bit about what we learned. Get involved with the program, as always, is available to you. The YouTube is there for you, Sports Radio 610. The Twitch is there for you, 610 Houston. And, of course, the text line is there for you, 713-572-4610. Let us know what you think. Because Packers, this was the best team that you faced off against. D'Amico Ryan said this is the best quarterback that you were facing off against in the first 7 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And as a test, there was a lot of things that we were seeing you would be tested on, right? Mm-hmm. We knew that this Packers team turned the football over. We knew that this Packers team could run the football in explosive ways. There's a lot of things that you got that you could be tested on in the course of this. And it feels like the overwhelming thing that you learned from this test was actually about the offensive line.
Yeah, look, you said at the very top, this was going to be a game that we learned some things on. We did. We learned. And I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, the season's over. They got no shot at what they, you know, what their goals are, et cetera, et cetera. That's a bit much when you have some of the players that we know they have, when you have a defense that can, by and large, do the job. But we have our answer in the most important way. Like yesterday, we're going into week eight, man. We have our answer. And the question is, what is this offensive line? This offensive line is awful. Like, it's really bad. And I can illustrate it a couple of ways. I know you want to weigh in, Figgy wants to weigh in, but we now know, if there's a quote problem with this Texans team, it's the offensive line. There's no more, well, maybe this and maybe that. Well, Joe Mixon running the ball could really open the passing game up. Well, how'd Joe Mixon play yesterday? Pretty damn well.
Yeah.
And they got destroyed. They got destroyed on the offensive line. It is the only thing that can keep this team from getting where it wants to go. And that's the offensive line. And even worse, it's the highest paid unit on the squad. You have two guys that are in the top five in salary, in contracts. You have three in the top 10. And that's not counting the number 15 overall pick. We had things we needed to learn. We learned. This offensive line is a big, big problem.
Yeah. The frustrating thing about this for me was that you did a lot of the things that we were hoping you could do in order to win this football game, right? You won the turnover battle by three.
How do you lose that game?
Three turnovers. That is a team that has constantly had the likes of three turnovers in their benefits in order to win games throughout the course of the season. You ended up flipping that on its head, and you lost that game because you were entirely ineffective offensively. Mm-hmm. And all of that, really, I think you boil it down majority-wise. Obviously, there's no situation where it's all one thing in a game as complex as football. But offensive line really held you back in a lot of ways. And honestly, if you do not have Joe Mixon being the type of running back that Joe Mixon is, I don't think you run the ball nearly as well either. And one of the things I like leaning on, it's one of those kind of truisms of football that I love, which is the game is about blocking and tackling. Mm-hmm. And when it came down to the blocking, it was really, really bad. And it wasn't that everybody was bad all the time. It just felt like even, you got out here and you have, it needs to be like hand in glove, right? Five fingers all moving towards the same end. And so many times, if you're going back and watching it, it's just, oh, there's Kenyon Green, missing a block, or there's Shaq Mason missing some, or Juice Scruggs not getting to the place, or Laremy Tunsil getting beat off the left side, or even sometimes Dalton Schultz getting beat off the left side. And it doesn't matter if everybody is pretty good, if at any given point, in any given juncture, one or two people are messing up, because ultimately the play is dead because you need everybody to pull their weight.
Look, man, you have C.J. Stroud. That's going to give you a chance. You have Joe Mixon. That's going to give you a chance. You have the defense. That's going to give you a chance. But let's talk about Stroud. He has been, as of today, pressured on pass attempts more than all but two quarterbacks in the league. More than all but two quarterbacks in the league, he's been pressured more. Zero quarterbacks have been hurried more than Stroud. In terms of pressure percentage, I know that's a stat that you look at a lot.
Yeah.
Only five teams have allowed more pressure than the Texans in terms of percentage of pass plays. This is ridiculous. And again, you can't downplay. It doesn't really matter on the field, but you can't downplay. This is where you invested the most money as a unit.
And that's just the money part of it. You've also invested a high level draft assets.
Exactly. Exactly.
And this is you're not even getting, I think, for the most part over the entirety of the season, you're getting average play. That was not average play in that game.
No.
That was bad play.
Yeah.
And your incredible quarterback, who we've been leaning on already to this point to kind of make the offensive line right, even when they are wrong, I think it says a lot that even in those instances he was not able to make them right.
Like, right.
It was very problematic in the course of this. Your quarterback was constantly under duress, and that took him out of his place to be able to do anything offensively. Like they neutralized your passing game without really doing a lot on the back end. It was a lot up front. And the thing that was the most frustrating is that, again, you see some of the same refrains pop up time and time again, and that's the issue, right? I think where I had gotten to in trying to calm some of my nerves with this Texans team was, okay, I will buy into the D'Amico Ryans philosophy of just win the game and find incremental progress. Find places where you're getting better. This was not, you did not have an opportunity to say that this team got better, particularly offensively, in the way that you played. And obviously, you didn't scrap out a win. And a lot of that for me was, when you talk about like the common refrains popping up against, you have simple games up front leading to completely wide open rushers barreling down at number seven.
Yes. Look. Okay. So let's talk about that. Like the two best teams they have faced, and I know you can throw the Bills in there, and we will in a second. But against the Vikings, C.J. Stroud was pressured on 44% of his throws. 44% against the Vikings, he was pressured. He was 4 for 14 on third down. Now let's go to this last game. Against the Packers, he was pressured on 48% of his dropbacks. Half the time he was running for his life. That's on the offensive line. It speaks to whatever you is breakdown. What you were saying, breakdown here, breakdown there. They went 4 for 13 on third downs, and he was 2 for 7 passing on third down. Like, it's the offensive line, and we also have the answer on, does Joe Mixon make the offensive line look good? Yes. Yes, Joe Mixon makes the line look better than they really are. So it's bad. I mean, it's not completely off the rails because they are leading the division still. They are, maybe they can somehow in the second half make incremental progress. But the one thing that'll keep them keep them from getting where they want to go? We have the answer. It's the line.
Yeah. And I look, as we're looking at the text line again, 713-572-4610. I think, yeah, 832 mentions that Stroud was visibly upset for maybe the first time this season.
Through his helmet.
And you could tell that there was like, that was a compounding frustration for him. That came immediately after he was again under siege. And yes, he does hold the ball a little much. And I think that that is, again, a factor of that, not being able to trust that line to hold up, right? Some of the things that you go to in the course of this game, knowing that pressure is coming, saying, all right, get the ball out quick, use some screens. Those were not effective, again, because of how badly the line was being beat at various points, where I do wonder if, hey, getting the ball out quickly gets tough because you know your eyes have to come down very quickly because the guys in front of you are letting a easy stunt or something, a game with the tight end or the tackling end come free. And so, I mean, look, a lot of praise is due to the other side of this, the coaching staff on the other side of this, particularly Jeff Hafley, I think, as a defense coordinator, does some good things. But it's not like it was super exotic. It was just at various points, either simple stuff that they were doing up front or just recognizing that we know what's coming over there and we know what you can and can't do. D'Amico Ryans actually talked about some of this yesterday after the game. He was asked how much the Packers' stunts and getting pressure affected him.
I think anytime you can, as a defense, they were able to get pressure, whether it's with the stunts or with the blitzes, right, it affects us. It affects the passing game, and we saw that today. But it's no excuses. We have to protect it. We have to go make plays.
Look, and you know, you're talking about like against the good teams. You can get by with this stuff against some teams, but you can't do it against the good teams. Even the Bills game, you know, one that they managed to win largely because of C.J. Stroud, they were pressured a lot. So like the three best teams you faced, he's been running for his life. And then yesterday, and maybe I'm reading too much into it, but you kind of alluded to it there, and you got me thinking about it, you know, like him holding the ball or whatever. C.J. Stroud, if you're not careful, and I think we saw a little bit of this yesterday, he bails a lot sooner from the pocket, or at least stepping up in the pocket or whatever, than he would have otherwise, than he has in the past. And why is that? Because he knows my line ain't going to hold up. So, like, even C.J. Stroud, like, again, stepping up, didn't see a lot of that.
No.
You know, a lot.
No, you didn't. And that's one of the things that's it's kind of crazy. C.J. Stroud will never say it. He's, you know, great teammate. He really operates by what the book, if there is one, on like how to handle being a quarterback, particularly a young one, being a leader, all those things. But you can tell in his play, it belies a lack of trust in the offensive line. And I don't think that you can get anything done with your quarterback already having to worry about what's happening on the line and them not getting the job done. Now, I will say the quarterback does hold a little bit of responsibility, and some of this maybe you can attribute to him being a young quarterback in this. There's various points, like there's points where I look up and I go, hey, man, they're sending five. You have your five offensive linemen and a running back, and you have people coming scot-free. And it's not just that they missed an assignment. It's clear that there was either a miscommunication or you simply did not set your protection properly. And I don't know who that you individually placed the responsibility on. So I feel like you can give it to all of them, right? Offensive line, C.J. Stroud, maybe even coordinator for not being able to set protection. But it feels like time and time again, you are being pantsed protection wise, and you're not going to be able to get anything done, particularly in this level, right? Maybe you've been able to make this happen. I think Brad on the text line asked, like, how can you have the offensive line be so bad in some instances and be so good in the other instances? I feel like in other instances, you're just being able to make do with a similar offensive line play, but you're able to make enough plays for this to be all right.
Well, that's why we talk about the Bills game.
And again, I feel like that's the caliber of team you're playing against. If you really want to be Super Bowl caliber or whatever, right, like all of this is fine and good. When you're getting to the playoffs, you're playing against good teams that are going to be able to identify weaknesses and pick at those scabs, and one of those is clearly offensive line. You're not going to get very far unless this gets better, and the thing that scares me is I'm starting to get to a place where I don't see the path forward on getting better.
Right, that's what I'm saying. That's why, you know, from the very jump today, I'm like, we have our answer. What can we do here? You know, can we put this guy in or that guy in? Like, you know, we're going to talk about the secondary and other places and all the receivers and all that today, of course. There are options there. What are your options on the offensive line? First of all, you've made the commitment, as we've talked about, financially and with draft equity. And secondly, they've been in their two worst games. They've had their starting five. Packers had all these guys. They had their starting five. Vikings, they had this starting five. Bills, they had the starting five minus Titus Howard, who was out. They had Blake Fisher playing against the Bills. So, like, this is who you're going with. How does it get better? I don't know, because I think after seven games and going into week eight, you don't have a lot of options. And you talk about schematically, yeah, there's some scheme problem. I mean, you had a couple plays where, and I think Romo talked about it during the broadcast. Like, you had the tight end and a tackle going blocking one end, and then there's a free runner right to the right of the tackle. You know, that would be Laremy Tunsil in the one I'm thinking of. So, no, they're bad, and there's not a lot of options.
Yeah, C.J. Stroud was asked in some ways about this. He said, obviously more offensively, but I think we've all diagnosed that the offensive line was a large part of why mm-hmm. offensively they couldn't get things done. Offensively, how do you feel like you guys can bounce back from this?
I mean, you got to watch the tape, but usually when you play bad or you come out the field, it's not as bad as it seems. It's usually, you know, you shot yourself in the foot a million times. And, you know, I think that's what we did. We just kept shooting ourselves in the foot once again. And I think, you know, that's just a recipe for disaster when you're playing against a great team. You know, I think our defense did a great job today. I thought our special teams did amazing, you know. So we got to be better as offense. You know, this is on us, point blank, period.
And there's so many instances where when asked about, like, we just got to be better, we just got to execute. But, like, I want to see what actually that means, mm-hmm. you know. And there definitely needs to be some level of lock-in because, again, it feels like there's lapses in focus that then end up with, you know, one player busting on the line and, you know, they're then being a player in the backfield. 11 tackles for loss in the course of this game. And so one of the things you mentioned, Romo also talked about how you have so many condensed formations. And I know that they like getting everybody involved. And this is more of a run game situation. But even then, right, like sometimes in the past, you just have, and I think Seth mentioned this in the morning today as well, you have a lot of people there and it kind of makes it tough to be able to even diagnose all the people that are going to be coming at CJ, and I do wonder, hey man, if you just spread it out, right? And one of the teams I thought about, and this is college as opposed to NFL, is Colorado. They know they don't got a good offensive line. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways they combat it is they just spread this thing out, right? And that'll move guys out of there, and it limits the number of people that can be in that box, and it at least gives you a clear picture of what is going to be attacking the quarterback. And I do wonder if they need to do some of that and abandon, maybe not even abandon, but lessen some of this condensed, you know, a lot of people in the mm-hmm. middle of this field, because it seems like it's not helping the offensive line, right? You had Laremy Tunsil trip on, or not Laremy
Tunsil,
Titus Howard rather, trip on Dalton Schultz.
I shouldn't laugh.
Like, you'll get some of that congestion out of here, you make it more apparent, and then I think it's easier for then CJ to see what's coming at him and diagnose it, because we know he's good at getting out of those situations, but just got to find ways to make it easier. And the worst thing about it is I feel like I've gotten to a place where I'm already just have to be content with the idea that the offensive line is going to be about this level of problematic.
No, look, I'm with you on the spreading them out, and I think that's something that that may have to be tinkered with offensively, because they know what they've got. They might say one thing publicly, but they know this offensive line. Look at C.J. Stroud throwing his helmet, D'Amico sort of talking around it a little bit. They know that this is just not getting it done. And you know, a texter from the 281, from the 314, said this game was winnable. The offensive line lost the game. Yes, it was. You couldn't get a more winnable game. You couldn't have gotten, this would have been more remarkable than the Buffalo game by far, because they got the three turnovers, as you mentioned. They got set up deep in the opposing territory, the interception from Hewitt. And you're still down, you know, fighting for your life and being drastically outplayed.
Yeah, and I think that when you say this game is winnable, I don't want that to obscure the depth of this issue here, because this game was winnable because your defense and special teams gave you some really outstanding play.
Yeah.
You literally, again, I'll bring this back to it, you won the turnover battle by three and you lost the game on a last second field goal. Like, you should have been able to cruise to this in some ways. You win a turnover battle by three, you should have a stark advantage in a game, and it just didn't feel like that. And that feels like not only about the offensive line, but a lot about how underperforming the offensive line was in general. There's a lot more to touch when it comes to this 24-22 loss to the Packers for your Houston Texans. And we'll get into all that on a Reaction Monday. Keep getting involved. Text line 713-572-4610. Coming up next, I kind of want to just get a little bit wider view. Let's get a 30,000-foot view on this game with OG's passing thoughts. We'll do that next.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Loop.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atitula.
You're in the loop, Sports Radio 610 on a Reaction Monday after the Texans fall 24-22 to the Packers. There's a lot of things to talk about in the course of this, and you guys want to hit all of them. I appreciate that. Also, I appreciate the folks that, you know what, you might be onto something here from the 832. The Texans lost because all last week, In the Loop said they were going to lose it every single day. You guys put that in the air, and they lost by 2 points. I need y'all to be more positive. I appreciate, one, that you think that I have that kind of power, myself and John and Figgy.
Hey, we was right then. If that's the case, we was right.
Yeah, but I mean, look, one thing about that.
That's a win right there.
Yeah. I don't know if that's the way that I want to win. I'm going to be completely honest. But yeah, we're going to be honest about the things that we see and try and give you as real of a
perspective. I didn't expect this,
as we could.
Yeah.
No, I definitely didn't.
I thought it would be a good high-scoring shootout.
Hey, I guess the positive thing is you ain't got to face the Packers no more. You ain't got to go through the Packers unless it's through the Super Bowl.
Yeah, right. I mean, your two losses have been to NFC teams. So I guess if you want to find some silver linings in that, you can with a 5-2 Texans team. But yeah, speaking of getting that real, I kind of want to get your perspective, John, of this game and OG's passing thoughts.
Yeah, man, let's start with this one.
Experience, wisdom, opinions, barbecue sauce. Our guy Lopez has it all and shares it with you.
I used to go into the clubhouse and I just
It's time for the OG's passing thoughts.
Tell me a story, OG.
Your imaginations are just going to have to use that. Never going to say what I said. I feel like there was maybe not a bad tone, but a bad vibe set from before the game even started. Stephon Diggs said, I'm going to fight all y'all. He said, I'm going to fight.
I'm putting cases on all you players.
he went Riley Cooper on him.
He said, I'm going to fight, the way the kids like to say, everybody. I'm going to fight everybody. But here's the thing. All of a sudden, Tank got into a little dust up. Titus Howard got into a little and mixed it up a little bit.
CJ was talking that talk.
CJ was talking that stuff a little bit. I feel like everyone was wired for this one from the start, which can be a good one. But you know who else was wired from the start? The Packers. Like they, you know, he Stephon Diggs kind of poked the bear. And oh, by the way, I don't know if he won that matchup with old Jair. Either way, so it's kind of just a bad, weird vibe, maybe. Another passing thought here. D'Angelo Ross reached unplayable status in this game. Like a big third down conversion. The big touchdown, which I'm going to get to in my next passing thought, so it's not all on him. Bad plays. The Packers just feasted. When they needed a big play, they dialed up, and Jordan Love looked for D'Angelo Ross.
Yeah, it was clear that they had made the decision that they were going to try and target him in some ways. I think there was one play in particular that I think a lot of people, and even in myself, I'm not going to put myself out of this, in the moment was like, ooh, that looks bad. And mm-hmm. And looking at it again, and obviously having the benefit of talking to someone like Clint Sterner, mm-hmm. it's like, oh, actually, that probably is more on the safety than it is on
I'm
him,
gonna get to that
right?
Next.
Like, where he was playing his technique properly. But at the very least, even if you want to, like, without even talking about, like, the actual play that he had, you could tell that there was a concerted effort to look around and go, hey, that is the weak spot that we can attack.
Yeah.
That doesn't feel good. I don't know how much I feel about calling him unplayable just yet.
During the game, he was unplayable.
They definitely missed Kamari Lassiter. That you can absolutely say.
This was my thought. This is the first thing I thought about when I kept seeing him.
Dog, take him the f*** out the game.
Well, he played 100% of the snaps. Don't you at least even try to mix it up? I get it. Kadar Holman, Chris Boyd are your options. But don't you at least try to mix it up a little bit?
Every big play was made on this mother.
All right, so here's where I got his back a little bit. I'm with you.
Yes.
Eric Murray was not a lot better. And on the big touchdown that was given up, quote unquote, by Ross, Murray took the bait. Like, he was way out of position at safety. And it was a simple look in the middle of the field by Jordan Love and then go to the left. So I am not going to put that one solely on Ross by any stretch. Eric Murray was not much better.
Yeah, and the cover two, they had a couple of routes go deep. They had a seam route, and then you had mm-hmm. that nine on the outside, and they got Eric Murray. Maybe he was looking into the backfield, got caught by the eyes, and then, you know, D'Angelo Ross playing a trail technique, thinking he has safety help over the top. Boom, ball goes over top, touchdown. And so, I think that might have been the drive, if I remember correctly, where the Packers did not have a single third down. It was just boom, 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 boom. Yeah. And that was a drive that I called offensive play caller drive. I think Matt LaFleur, I've seen him do this before.
Yeah.
Matt LaFleur is very good at, you know, really making it tough on a defense. And it felt like that was the drive capped off by that play where it was very evident that, hey, look, Matt LaFleur, he does this. He gives them a clear schematic advantage when he is out there calling a play.
Yeah, and on Ross, you know, we said he did all right in last week, but he only had one target. He had a lot more than one target yesterday. Another passing thought here. When you're down your number one wide receiver in this kind of game, you cannot drop a touchdown. Tank Dell, that was huge. That was enormous. That was the momentum shifter. And, oh, by the way, Tank Dell was 0-for on his targets. Got to get more out of Tank Dell.
Yeah, at this point, some of the conversation about him, you know, getting more, you know, involvement in the offense, how do you get him involved? Some of it is like the plays have to be made. And it felt weird because it felt like a carbon copy of the touchdown that he had last week.
Mm-hmm.
And you just got to reel those in, right? Like you need the plays when you need them. And that was one of those that you absolutely needed. Getting three instead of seven there, especially, it would have been a huge flip. Where you know the Packers decide to take the football to start the game, right?
Yeah.
Like that is a demonstrative move. That mm-hmm. is bold in a lot of ways. You got a turnover, and it would have been great to flip that instead of them getting seven to start the game and set the tone. You set the tone with seven, and it felt like in some ways,
for the Packers.
Yeah, that really really lessened the blow that you could have had early on.
Yeah, we talked about Dalton Schultz a lot last week, and then he had a nice play. Was it 20 something? No, I forget how far it was, but. Made a nice play, and I said, all right, I'm going to put...
Oh, in this game?
Yeah.
26-yarder.
26. I thought it was 28.
Over the middle.
Yeah. And I was like, all right, I'm going to put a pin in that. Then I pulled the pin. His quarterback was under too much pressure, but here's the thing.
I'm sorry, 28 yards. It was the one.
It was 28. Yeah. That's what I thought it was.
My bad.
When your quarterback is under that much pressure on the run, his outlet, which is the tight end, has to come up with more than one catch. That's the outlet. That's the where's Dalton Schultz getting open? Where's, you know... Whether it's LaPorta or Kelsey, you know, sort of scrambling and getting open to help your quarterback, Dalton Schultz had one catch. You got to have more than that.
Yeah, you just did not have very many balls thrown out in general. Like, he had 21 attempts total, and seven of those went to Stephon Diggs. It just felt like you didn't get very much mm-hmm. in the course of this, and Look, I think we'll have more opportunity to talk about this, and maybe this also circles back to the offensive line. CJ Stroud, uncharacteristically bad, even when he had a little bit of time or when he was able to generate some time. Mm-hmm. He had at least one, I could think of off the top of my head, two or three just completely errant throws. That made
one
me
flat
think,
in the dirt on third down.
Made me think, is he a little shell-shocked by the pressure that he's under
I would
in this
be.
Game? I mean, career high amount of pressure
be.
In this game. And it seemed like it also affected his ability to get the ball to his wide receiver.
Yeah. All right, so this is one that I kind of alluded to with you and Figgy before the show, and I know you guys are going to fall on the other side of this, but hear me out, famous last words.
Uh-oh.
So
it's never good when somebody says, hear me out.
Right, because they know.
No, we don't.
They know. Wildin'.
I think you need to hear me out, and you'll be nodding your head in agreement. Jake Hansen had a real nice play, staying at home on a reverse, right?
Yes, absolutely, right? And open field tackle.
Yeah, open field tackle. Neville Hewitt had several nice plays, had the interception. I think led the team in tackles, et cetera. But here's where I'm going to differ with a lot of people that thought, and look, Neville Hewitt had a good game. You know, if you just say yes or no, yes, he had a good game. But Josh Jacobs averaged 6.3 yards a carry. And the two middle linebackers, which are Jake Hansen and Neville Hewitt, cannot have a running back average 6.3 yards a carry. You saw Tony Romo drawing up the lanes a couple of times. Wide open lanes with those guys getting blocked out of position on the second level. Dude, they had good, well, more so Neville Hewitt had a good game, but they got gashed in the run game, man.
Man, we doing nitpicks already?
No, yeah. This is not a nitpick. Yep. This is not man. A nitpick. Yep. Dude, you saw
man,
it. You
this
saw
is the it. Third and fourth linebacker on the
I know,
team.
No,
though.
I'm
actually
just,
in a way fourth and fifth.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, kind I'm of. Being nice.
Yeah, but still, okay. You know, we're sitting here going, "Oh, Neville Hewitt, great game. Hey, great play, Jake Hansen. Yes, 6.3 yards a carry." Can't have that.
Yeah, there was definitely a few times where they got gashed where, you know, like Neville Hewitt just misses a tackle in the gap where Jake Hansen kind of gets juked a little bit by the offensive play with the motion and a little bit of an angle route and all those things, right? Like, I think that there's a couple of plays there. I think overall, understanding the circumstances and, you know, I'm willing to give them a level of credit for handling up in a way. And maybe this is also framing coming in. I had concerns about them in coverage, and they handled that fairly well.
Hewitt
as well.
Did. Yeah.
So, yeah, and they made some plays, and I think ultimately when it came down to missing the starters that you were, I think that overall I'm willing to give them a thumbs up on the performance. But, yeah, I'm not going to act like they didn't have plays that they probably could have made better or plays that would have been made if you had Aziz out there, if you had Christian out there, and even sometimes if you had Henry.
Funny thing you mentioned that because obviously Tim Settle played well. But I wondered last week about Danico Autry and his snap count, you know, just getting thrown right back into it. He only played 48% of the snaps. So Danico Autry was still just getting his feet under him.
Sure. And funny enough, like not just the number of snaps, I don't feel like I had much occasion to recognize that Danico Autry was on the field.
Yeah.
There was a point of time during the game where I was trying to be very conscious of is that Danico? Is he in there? And that left me very quickly. Mm-hmm. The name that kept the person and the number that kept flashing was Tim Settle.
Yeah.
And so yeah, that one mattered a lot more to me defensive tackle wise than Danico Autry.
Three more here. The first one was just I literally put down on the dock what I usually do as I'm going through the game. I put my passing thoughts down, then I kind of formulate them. But I'm just going to tell you guys what I wrote down. Which wrestling move do you think Neville Hewitt is going to try next?
Amen.
Yeah. When you mentioned him having a good game, I was going to say having a good match.
Yeah.
The way he out there wrestling.
Five-star match. Like, hey, Neville.
What's his next move? So he's got the suplex yesterday.
People's elbow. Like, dog, what are you on, man?
You need a DDT.
DDT.
And the real frustrating thing about that was, like, that was probably going to be a stop. Like, that was probably going to be a hold for the defense.
Oh, for sure.
And that, if we talk about the margins that ended up turning what could have been a win into a loss, that was one of them, right? Like, you had a few moments where you turned a hold into a continued drive that led to points. And that was one of those. And it's as simple as, hey, bro, you got him wrapped up. Either hold him wrapped up.
Yeah.
Don't kill him.
What are you suplex? You and It would be one thing if it was one of those penalties that we know that the refs be wilding on, they be tripping on.
No, no, this was...
We know that once you flip that man over your head, you are getting a penalty every time.
As soon as I seen that, I'm like, please don't throw the flag, please. Just let I'm like, damn.
All right, I'm going to end it on a high note. I got two high notes here, all right? I said it last week. The ball just finds Kalen Bullock. That dude, he's in the hunt.
Can we say the ball finds him? If he put up a like 70-inch vertical, he got up.
Yeah, but I'm saying he's just one of those guys.
Nah, he found the ball.
Yeah, man.
He plays center field. In fact, I think Sean and Clint asked him after the game if he played any baseball. He did, and he played center field in this show.
I think they brung it up on the broadcast. I think they mentioned he was a former he played some baseball, too.
Last one. And I'm saying this just falling on the sword. I'm saying it for you and Figgy's benefit. Okay, Tommy Townsend. I see you.
Big punt, baby.
I see you, Tommy Townsend.
That is a spiteful punter right now. John Lopez? Yeah. Word? Yeah.
That was potentially one of the biggest plays of the game. You know, nailing down deep in their own territory because then you got the ball back.
Yeah, special teams did some solid stuff in the course of this. But, yeah, definitely quite a few errors in other places for this team in what was a 24-22 loss. It took you off of the pace of your best record in franchise history. Was that 2012 where you started 6-1, in fact. And there was real hope that you could have gotten it done. And even with all of the negative play, you still had an opportunity to, unfortunately. Brandon McManus, a dude who we talked about a little bit last week, just signed to the Packers. He did you in at the very end. And it's a loss in Lambeau. All right. You're in the Loop, Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's get to our question of the day. Is there hope still for this Texas team? Do you still have hope? And if so, where? That's our question of the day. 713-572-4610. Give us your hope with the Texans. We'll do that next.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios. Here's In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atitula.
At the 34-yard line of the Packers, here's Jordan Love stepping underneath the setter. He's got Jacobs in the backfield. On first down, Love looks it over. Love, play action. Love with some heat on, fires downfield and intercepted. Bullock has it at the 45-yard line down there. Second pick of the game for the Houston Texans.
That's one of the three turnovers that the Texans generated in their loss to the Packers 24-22 at Lambeau. Shout out to Kalen Bullock, the youngster, constantly around the football, playing, you know, kind of roaming that center field as he does at safety. Is he maybe one of the things that gives you hope with this Texans team? As we get into our question of the day here in the Loop, do you still have hope for this Texans team, and where does your hope reside if so? When it comes down to it, Lopez, is there something for you that jumps to mind that keeps you kind of thinking about the hope that exists for this Texans team going on?
I'm thinking short term and then long term. Kalen Bullock obviously is a big part of the long term, as are you know, a lot of these young players and such. But let's focus on, at least I am, I'm going to focus on short term. As bad as it is with the offensive line, you've proven how you can win. You've proven that you can win games because you have C.J. Stroud. Now, my only worry with C.J. Stroud, we alluded to, is it's starting to get in his head a little bit. You know, he really wasn't the same guy. He was bailing a little sooner. He was not stepping up in the pocket as he could have. No, certainly several instances he couldn't have because the pressure was coming up the middle. But it seemed like he was bailing. Nevertheless, my hope is on C.J. Stroud. That's not very creative. But, I mean, that's what we have. That's where we are right now.
No, and I think that is a luxury that you have with a team of a team that is in a situation that has a quarterback of this magnitude. Mm-hmm. Not very many teams have that situation when they can go, well, if all else fails, we know that guy back there under center or behind center in shotgun situations, we feel, the utmost confidence that he is going to do everything in his possibility to get us to a W.
Yeah,
and,
he can
in that spot
when he's playing, loose and free and not maybe hearing steps. I'm interested what you and Figgy are like. Where's the hope? Let's talk short term, because we know the long term. This team is getting built the right way. I feel like it is.
Yeah,
I
think for me it's just like this defense. One, generated some turnovers, but two, like even without. And you talked about this a lot. This was one of your favorite talking points last week. 4 to 5 starting players
ultimately,
on the defense. They still, for the most part, held it down. They still were able to generate turnovers. They were still able to get some stops. Now, of course, I don't know how much you can kind of do this, but if you get rid of some of like the, you know, boneheaded plays that seem to move from offense to defense this week. But if you got rid of a couple of those, this would have been an incredible defensive game for the defense. And the defense continues to be the tip of the spear for this team.
Mm-hmm.
That is a hope for me, is that I know that this defense will continue to stand up when needed and give you an opportunity to compete in games.
You have hope?
Yeah, I still have hope, man. I think, honestly, and I ain't trying to take the easy answer out, but as long as C.J. Stroud is under center, man, I'm going to always have hope, because they didn't even have a good game yesterday, and they were still somewhat in the game. But I think C.J. Stroud just didn't have a really good game. I know that's not cool to say.
Yeah.
But he didn't have that C.J. Stroud type of game.
What about getting Nico back?
Oh, yeah, that's clearly a big hope.
Oh, 100%. Mm-hmm.
We'll have to talk more about this as we go. But, yeah, man, it... You almost wonder why he seems to matter so much in the course of his passing offense. A lot was made about the five-headed monster. And, yeah, man, obviously offensive line did not allow them to be great in some ways in this game. But there was other issues that you could point to passing-wise. Never feels like that with Nico Collins, right? Mm-hmm. When Nico Collins is out there, at the very least, in a tough situation, in a scramble drill, whether maybe not a lot of separation and as an opportunity to go and get deep shots, he provides all of those things, which are all super helpful, super necessary for you, and allows you to continue moving the ball, like continue drives on third downs, because you know that he gives you a shot and moving the sticks. Like all of those things, it feels like those have either diminished or almost fallen by the wayside in some ways. Nico Collins coming back is just, he is quite a jump start to whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
That absolutely is great, knowing that he will make his way back. And I don't think that his injury was to the point where we're going to be in a Christian Harris type situation where the window opens up and we're like, hey, what's happening?
Where are you?
I do have the feeling that this was more precautionary considering the nature of the soft tissue injury with the hamstring. They're like, hey, we want to make sure you're all the way right, so that when that window opens back up, you're ready to go and hit the ground running.
Interesting one from the 409, because I know we're going to be talking about this at some point this week, if not today. But my hopes are that they make some good trades. A lot of money on the offensive line, but they need to fix it. Boy, trades on the offensive line.
Yeah, people, that is obviously always a consideration. A tough one. Especially once you get to a point when you're wondering if the line as constituted can get better, which I know there's a lot of people that are there. I just always default to the idea of there aren't that many good offensive linemen, and so when you have them, it's hard to get one, right? When have we seen, especially elite offensive linemen, move? And the last ones I'm thinking about are like Ronnie Stanley with the Ravens. I'm thinking about Trent Williams, and he wanted to move more than they wanted to move him. Like, it feels like there has to be either an awkward, odd circumstance, or a team, or like a player that feels like he wants to move that initiates.
Well, here's the other thing: does one player help this line?
That's a great question. I'm not sure that the answer is yes. There,
yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like as bad as they've been, I don't know if it's an obvious answer on who do you replace.
That's what I'm saying. Like, okay, so
do you replace Titus Howard?
I don't know.
Do you just
Kenyon Green? I don't know.
Do you?
Does it make a difference?
I don't know.
Titus Howard fell. I know it happens, but just like stumbled and fell to the ground and in a crucial situation. I get it. It happens. But man,
I just don't think they're, as bad as they are, I don't think they're that bad to the point where you could point out at one of them, like, we need to find a replacement for this.
Exactly.
And where it'd be good. It's a weird position to be in.
And again, if it was one guy consistently, and I know Laramie Tunsil's name is the one that gets called a lot. If it was just like, hey, it's this one guy every time, maybe.
Yeah.
It's like a shooting pain.
Exactly.
Right? It just jumps around the offensive line in some ways as to who is going to have the thing that is the broken link on the chain in a given moment. And so, yeah, as annoying as it can be listening to the offensive line or listening to different people in the team talk about, oh, well, we just need to execute. We just need to do better. It feels like that ultimately is the case outside of, like, hey, changing some of the things that you do in order to make it easier to do better.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know if there's even a particular person that I point to.
I would say Stroud, and really, you know, getting healthy defensively. Like, because that's far too many people to have out. I get, you know, they made some plays here and there, and overall with the three turnovers, you can't argue about that. But that would give you better depth, give you better rotations. You know, maybe Mario Edwards when he comes back, and then you have Autry, you know, with more reps under his belt. Maybe this just has to become a running team that plays good defense.
Yeah, I was going to say, if he stay healthy, I'm very comfortable with the running game. Like, as long as Joe Mixon play.
I'm very comfortable with Joe Mixon.
Yeah. Well, that's what he said. He said the running game.
If healthy.
Joe Mixon is the running game. Yeah. Obviously, somebody's mentioned on the YouTube, Kenny Green's still a rookie, basically. Stuff like that is going to happen occasionally. Happens to veterans, too. Yeah, I think the thing that makes it untenable is that it keeps bouncing around. But we've gotten real negative. Let's get back to the hopes of this, right? And one of the things that gives me hope is Tank Dell can't continue looking like this, necessarily. Like, this feels like this is the low end of what's happening here. It seems like there will be better play from Tank. Obviously, we've seen better play from Stephon Diggs than this game in particular. Those things, they have to come back and, you know, at least normalize in some ways. And it feels like you haven't been in that place. Some other things to come in on the text line, 832. Will Anderson Jr. is my hope right now. Shout out to Kalen, though. And, yeah, the defensive pass rush remains at a level that I feel great about. I was talking about the defense as whole. But, like, yeah, the tip of that spear there for the defense is being able to generate pressure. And those guys did that at a high level, including, obviously, Danielle Hunter gets a sack as well as Will Anderson Jr. Plus, Tim Settle was in that backfield causing havoc. The defensive line I feel good about.
I'm with you 100%.
Do you still got hope in the receiving right now?
Let's talk at 1 o'clock.
Okay. He needs to ruminate on that. That's exactly what he'll do here in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's go around the NFL, talk about some of the other things that happened in the National Football League, including the torn Achilles heard around the league and all the responses to it. We'll talk about that and more next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, 3-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.